This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio. Hello?
Can I speak to you? Oh, never mind. So
to stay the same, even though you're not yourself, and you've got somebody else. When they tell you that you've got yourself to blame, even though it's not your flow, but your heart just wants to know. No,
from the subway,
you looked my way
with your girl gaze.
With your girl gaze,
that was the day
everything changed.
Now it's something else.
Hello and welcome back to the Callum McSwiggan Show. Today I am joined by the incredible poet and author, Dean Atter.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm really good. Really glad to be here.
Well, it's amazing to have you here. And I know you're here to talk about your new book, The Black Flamingo.
That's right.
Which off air I just got wrong and called it The Pink Flamingo, so I got telling off for that.
No one needed to know. You didn't need to admit that to
me. No,
them.
I did. I felt for my own conscience that I needed to clear the air there. But you are a poet and an author, so let's talk about your background. How did you get into poetry to begin with?
I got into poetry as a way of kind of like processing things I wasn't ready to talk about. Mm-hmm. So that could be anything from like being mixed race and just living with one of my parents, and so like only really knowing my Greek Cypriot side of the family, and then, you know, I knew the Jamaican family, but I wasn't living with my dad, and so that was something I wrote about quite a lot. Being gay, or kind of realizing I was gay. I did that through many, many poems. Took me like love poems and kind of angsty poems and all sorts of things to kind of process that. And being a young person, like, you just, there's a lot, you get angry about a lot of things.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And I think, yeah, when I look back at my younger self in poetry, I see how angry he was. And like, it's not that I'm not angry now, I'm just a bit more, I guess, pragmatic about things. So my poetry was really like where you saw my fire and my angst and my passions of all sorts.
Yeah, you don't seem like a very angry person sat with you now. You seem so relaxed
all the yoga
and serene.
And meditation I do these days and all the therapy I've had, so I'm a lot more chilled out. And you know, I wish I'd found some of those things when I was younger, actually. But I had poetry.
I definitely think there is a place for, you know, anger, you know, especially mm-hmm. when talking about like these kind of issues and your place and figuring yourself out. And I guess were you sharing this poetry when you were younger, or was it kind of just an outlet for you to figure yourself out?
I shared it for the first time when I was about 17 years old at an open mic night in Covent Garden at the Poetry Cafe, and it was to a room of strangers. So it kind of felt great because I did use my real name, but I didn't have to. Yeah. I could have gone there and be completely anonymous to those people and just shared that and never gone back. But actually, I had a really good reception and people came to speak to me. There was a particular poem I think I'd written about my dad, and someone else kind of came up to me and said, you know, I've had a similar experience. I really related to that poem. And I felt that initial connection, and that felt really good because these were things I wasn't really talking about. But mm-hmm. then through the poetry, opened up dialogue with other people. And that was really great for me back then. I really appreciated that kind of dialogue that came at those events.
Mm-hmm. Did you find that, like, were you talking about these issues with friends, etc.? Or was it very much that you were creating this poetry on mm-hmm. your own, and then you were stepping out onto a stage for the first time and sharing this?
A lot of the time that was it, yeah. Stepping out for the first time with these private thoughts and then making them public to a room full of strangers. I don't know why I didn't show my friends first, but
I think sometimes it can be it's quite daunting to show our friends. I think sometimes it's in a way easier to share it with complete strangers. Is that how you felt?
Yeah, and I mean, I did perform as a child, so I did like musical theater, I did singing and dancing and acting, and so I was used to being on stage and performing, but it was always other people's words.
Yeah,
and so when it was my own words, the stakes felt a lot higher. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I did all the school plays and talent shows as well as stuff on the West End, so I wasn't scared to perform. But when it came to those open mic poetry nights, I was terrified.
but it's led to something amazing, which is incredible. And and I think, you know, you were saying that you have been on a journey. You've gone from that place where it was very angry to begin with, and now you're in a place where, I think you said it, pragmatic was your word of choice.
Though, because this book is written for teenagers, I've tried to and capture some of that anger again through the characters that I've written. So everyone in the book is a teenager, and their anger and passion is there and feels really authentic, because I do a lot of work with young people, and I do poetry workshops with young people, so they are really angry. There's a lot for them to be angry about, and so I wanted to speak to that and you know, put that in writing, like I encourage the young people I work with to do as well. So it was really fun writing teenage characters with a kind of all the sense of I've got the solution and I know all the answers, and sometimes they do. It's just hard to implement some of those things in this kind of like climate of capitalism and mm-hmm. all the other things that are going on that make it really hard to make really big changes that we need.
It's a lot to unpack. So can you give us an overview about what the book is about?
Yeah, okay. So The Black Flamingo is about a boy called Michael growing up and coming out, coming to terms with his sexuality, making friends and falling in love, and then going to university and becoming a drag queen. And so that's kind of like the finale is when he kind of really steps into his power and discovers this kind of like the joy of performing in drag, and it really opens him up and gives him a fresh perspective on like the potential for himself and his life. So and I think anyone that's done drag or watches drag can see how empowering it is for those that do it and the audiences, because it shows your possibility beyond what you might see on a day-to-day basis, and I think we all need that.
And so would you say it's a celebratory piece? You know, I can see it in front of me, and it's got a lovely bright cover there, and it looks like a very
We've got flamingos on the cover, both pink and the black flamingo. We've got Michael in his full drag with feathers, and you know, he's looking quite soulful.
What a great way to describe it!
Yeah, and it is a celebration, and throughout the book, you know, he has his challenges as one would. It's, you know, any teenager has challenges, and being black and gay, you have challenges. But he with the support of friends and family, really kind of comes through stronger through them all. So it's, yeah, definitely a celebration. I wanted it to be hopeful. I wanted it to leave people feeling really optimistic and empowered. And, you know, for me, it's like a book I wish I had when I was a teenager. And
that's,
so
that's
I'm glad
really,
I got
really,
to write it.
Yeah, that's really lovely to hear. And I think it's actually something that's quite a rarity, you know, especially when we're talking about kind of intersectional minorities. I think so much kind of queer fiction, it kind of does. It resides in the miserable and the gritty. And yeah. I know that's important. It is important to, you know, tell those stories and to explore those ideas and to talk about those issues. Yeah. But I think sometimes it's just, you know, we need a little bit of celebration. Mm. And that's not to say you can't talk about important topics, yeah. which I'm sure that you have done.
And there's an awareness of those things going on in this book. So like when Michael does come out to his mother, the first thing she says to him is, you've got to use protection. You've got to be careful about HIV. So there's an awareness of things like that. But I didn't want to write that narrative where he contracts HIV and yeah. that becomes the story, because there are many of those stories told so well, especially things dealing with the 80s and the AIDS epidemic and all the people we lost. So I think those stories are so important to have, and we have them. And so they're in books and they're in films and they're in plays. And, you know, I really welcome them. I think they're important for people to know that history and remember it. But this is now, and now things are slightly different for young people. And yeah, I wanted to show a young person that's empowered, that has all the vocabulary at their disposal to describe themselves and who they are in the world, and kind of can find a support network quite quickly as soon as they're coming out. So yeah, when I was younger, it didn't seem that possible to like just kind of say who you are and be accepted, whereas now it is like that for young people. Yeah. It is possible, you know, it's not always going to happen, but it is possible. So I wanted to give that sense of hope and possibility.
Would you say it would have been, for instance, if we had been given a book like this when we were growing up, would you have said that it was almost would have been like irresponsible to give us that hope, you know? Or do you think...
Yeah, I mean, the first line of the book is like, this book is a fairy tale. And I do feel like I have written a fairy tale. It's like best case scenario. Like, this is all the good things going on for this person. And I think, why not, though?
We love
fairy tales.
Absolutely.
I grew up on Disney as well as all the other things. And I think sometimes it's nice to have the happy ending. And but yeah, I just think it might have been, I don't know, irresponsible is an interesting choice of word, but maybe, yeah, to say, yeah, come out, everyone's going to love you. It might not have been the case for you or I, but it
is in the clip right now. It is, yeah. And especially with the future, I think, you know, the way rights and things are progressing, you know, I think the world is only going to get better and better. And I think it's time we give people a little bit of hope, you know. I think so many of us struggled when we were growing up because we were told that it was going to be miserable and that we're going to struggle. And, you know, it's just nice to have that kind of feeling of excitement and hope for the future.
Definitely.
Let's talk a little bit about, I feel like you've put a lot of yourself into the book. Is that true?
My mum thinks so.
Because I understand you do a little bit of drag as well.
I do drag, but I only came to drag in my 30s. I'm 34. I came to drag a few years ago, and it was something that I wished I'd done when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. I wished I'd done in my 20s, but was a bit scared of how much I might like it or how much it might challenge my sense of myself as a man. And so I just didn't go down that road until I just kind of saw the perfect thing advertised. It was like a 10-week course called The Art of Drag. And
I was like,
that sounds amazing. And it's run by Michael Twaits, who's an amazing drag performer, who describes himself as a man in a dress. And I was like, that's what I would be. Like,
yeah.
And so that was kind of like the kind of like that what attracted me to it, was that it wasn't saying you kind of have to make definite choices. It's not going to affect your gender identity. It's just about like trying something. And so it kind of reminded me of the acting I did was that when I was a child, and I was like, this can be a character, the Black Flamingo. And so that's my drag character as well as the Black Flamingo, the same
I've
chosen for Michael in the book. So that is the link there, whereas everything happened for Michael in his teens, like some things have only happened for me very recently. So I didn't step into high heels until very recently, and yeah, I was missing out clearly.
Well, there is that idea about, you know, LGBT plus people kind of having to experience things for the first time quite a lot later in life, especially, you know, if you grew up in the 80s, 90s or even earlier perhaps.
Yeah.
And you know, and now we are given these freedoms, and it's like, you know, I've never really done drag properly, you know, and I could try that tomorrow, and
that'd be
that.
Great cheekbones. You'd be great for it.
I think I'd look alright.
Yeah,
I'd look okay. You know, I could try that tomorrow at 30 years old, but I think it's amazing now how we're seeing so many young people coming to things like the art of drag, for instance. Mm. Like, I think it's absolutely incredible that there's all these, there's all these like 18-year-old drag queens running around London now.
Yeah.
And I might be wrong, but I don't think it used to be that way 10 years ago, 15 years ago, because I think, you know, it was something that people were coming to much, much later. Mm. And I think that's because we're in a place now where, you know, LGBT plus people feel more comfortable to come out at a younger age. So they feel more comfortable to start trying things like drag. So, you know, a character like yours, I think, is very relevant for the modern day.
But like you said, a lot of us come to things a bit later. So, you know, I've had friends and partners who only came out in their 20s and 30s, you know, and so there have been people that said, I'm not a teenager, but I'm going to buy this book because actually I need to read something like this. Yeah. I need to be empowered. And so I'm not limiting the audience of the book for just teenagers. I think anyone who wants to read it is really welcome to, and I hope they do. And I think, things are changing, and I think young people are doing amazing things right now. And so I'm just really happy to witness and kind of sometimes stand on stage alongside some amazing young people. And it gives me a lot of hope. I'm talking like I'm not young, but
we're very young people.
Yeah. I'm not an old man.
What are those youths doing? I know that you must have like or perhaps you've already done it, but like a tour around the book coming up, or you've already done that?
I've got a series of shows coming up, and I've done a few already. The Black Flamingo Cabaret is kind of the show that I host and have guest performers at, and so the next one will be in October at King's Place in London, and it's with Poet in the City, an amazing organization that works with poets. And I've got Travis Alabanza and C Sharp as
Travis.
My two guests. You love Travis. Travis is great. Travis is up in Edinburgh at the moment doing a show called Burgers, so everyone should go see it if they can.
Everyone should go see Burgers. We actually had Travis on the show about a year ago, and they were talking about it then. Absolutely love them. Absolute superstar. So that's so exciting. And I assume you're going to be doing spoken word and things like that as
I'm going to be reading from the book. I'm going to be doing drag, and I've got lots of shows up and down the country. I'm going up to Edinburgh as well to the book festival to do a couple dates up there this month, and also something down in Brighton, Coast is Queer, which is a queer literary festival that's happening. So I'll be there in September on the 13th of September, and there's going to be a queer cabaret, and it's going to be amazing. So there's so much going on now in literature, in drag, like queer artists are kind of like really stepping to the forefront, artists and authors, and it's just been a really great thing to be part of, to see that, you know, people like Travis is a household name, like, and I'm hoping with my book that could be the same for me. So I'm just really excited that we're putting these positive, affirming messages out there collectively.
Well, I mean, what a time to be alive. It's so exciting. Exactly. And I mean, congratulations on everything. What is the hope for it? Because this is your second book, isn't it?
Yeah. So my first book was a poetry collection.
Yeah.
This one is a novel, but still in verse. So if you flick through the pages, it is a series of poems, but they're telling a story. So
I love that.
Yeah. And that was kind of the reason they got me to write a novel, because if they said just sit down and write a prose novel, that might have been a bit of a challenge. But because I've written it a poem at a time to tell the story, it just felt like what I do naturally, but just doing it over a longer form. And so
that's
incredible. Really,
has that been done before?
Oh yeah, there's
okay, I thought you invented that.
I didn't invent it.
Oh, you couldn't let me give you credit for it. Nobody would have known.
People would not have allowed me to take credit for verse novels.
Well, it sounds amazing. And I'm really, really excited to read it. And it's out tomorrow?
On the 8th of August, yes. Everywhere.
Everywhere. All
and
good bookstores, online, audiobook. Did you do the audiobook?
I did the audiobook. Oh. So if you like this voice, I can read a whole story to you.
I could listen to that voice all night long. I could. So I think the audiobook might be one for me. Shall we have a bit of music, Dean?
Yeah.
All right. Let's have a little bit of Heart to Break, Kim Petras.
Anytime that you like, come give me my heart to break. Angel eyes, tell me lies, gonna give you my heart to break. One look at you, I'm powerless. I feel my body saying yes. Where's my self-control?
when you touch me, I'm a fool. This game I know I'm gonna lose. Makes me want you more. Even if it means that I'll never put myself back together. Gonna give you my heart to break. Even if I end up in shadows, baby, it doesn't matter. Gonna give you my heart to break. I'll try to fight, but I can't help it. Don't care if this is my worst mistake. Cause no one else can do it better. And that's why I give you my heart to break.
Butterflies, every time. Gonna give you my heart to break.
Heart to Break by Kim Petras. And to our lovely listeners, anyone who listens to this show knows that we are absolutely obsessed with Kim Petras over here. And we are lucky enough to be giving away two tickets to go and see her in London. So if you do want to get involved with that, you can head over to the FUBAR Radio Instagram, follow them, follow Kim Petras on Insta, and then go onto the post and tag a mate. Do it as many times as you like. Every single time you do it is an entry, and you and a friend could be going on to see Kim Petras. And I think I want to go. It's 27th of August. It's going to be an amazing time. It's in heaven. We love Kim. Absolutely love Kim. Do you love Kim, Dean?
You've just introduced me to her today. And I do love it. It was really fun. I was bopping around in the studio.
She has so many good songs as well. Like, okay. It's literally like bop after bop. It's like Beyonce, you know. She's just like a lot of good music.
I'm sold.
Shall we play a game, Dean?
Yeah.
Okay, this game is queers throughout the years.
Okay.
How are you with your LGBT plus history?
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to be great.
I feel like every time we play this game, everybody's afraid to say that they like, oh yeah, I know a bit about like LGBT plus history, because they don't want to be shown up.
Yeah, exactly.
But we do tend to go quite niche. So in front of me, I have five facts taken from LGBT plus history. Some of them are true.
Okay.
And some of them have been completely fabricated by my lovely producers.
Okay.
I do not know whether these are true or false.
Oh, you don't know either.
Okay, no, cool. And I don't have the answers in front of me.
Okay.
So we're going to work together.
Okay, great.
To try and figure these out. And I think we'll make a good go of it.
Okay.
I think we can get at least a few of these right.
Okay, let's do it.
Fingers crossed. Okay, our first one. Gay icons, mm-hmm. Ellen DeGeneres, mm-hmm. and Madonna,
yep.
are related.
I can't see how.
Ellen is a fair bit younger than Madonna.
Yeah, but that's not how relations
work.
How
relations work. No, but I'm just trying to figure out, like, what if they were related? Like, what would it be?
I know,
like distant
Madonna's,
cousins?
Is Madonna Italian? Is that her background?
Perhaps.
I think so.
I'm going to say yes.
I thought she was. I don't really know Madonna's kind of background, like, in terms of, like, I know she's
what's
a
her,
white woman.
Like, what's her name? What's
DeGeneres.
Her?
What? Where's that from? It sounds German, maybe?
No, Madonna. No. Madonna's name.
Oh, I should know that.
And I have no idea what Madonna's name is. It's not Madonna.
It's
sure.
not Madonna. No. But I always get it mixed up with Lady Gaga's name, so I'm not sure which one is the what is Madonna's name? We're not, terrible.
Lovely producers, do we know what Madonna's real name is? Are we allowed a clue?
It's definitely Italian, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, they're going to tell us. It is her real name.
No.
Her real name is not Madonna.
No.
Madonna what? Like, she needs a
What's
surname.
What's her surname?
That is not her real name. Madonna Louise Ciccone.
She's Italian, I think, or Ooh. Sicilian.
So we think DeGeneres is also Italian?
No. I think it's like German or like Dutch or like it doesn't sound Italian. So but that's a surname. It's just that's only
well,
one part.
Yeah, you can get marry you into know. A different surname.
Yeah, I've changed my surname, so I don't know if you know Madonna obviously dropped hers. She's got something to hide. No. I don't know. I don't think they're related.
I think this has been, I just think this has been completely plucked from the sky, and there's nothing to it. Like, there's not even an element of truth in
well,
this.
Well, we get told what if they are related, what the relationship is.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. So are we saying that this is completely false and they're
I think
not related?
It's false. Yeah.
Okay. That is our final answer. It is false. It's true.
What? 11th cousin.
Ellen DeGeneres' 11th cousin is... What's an 11th cousin? That's not a thing.
Callum,
not,
we're related, I'm sure.
Well, isn't it like everyone is by like 7 degrees of separation or something?
6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, isn't
yeah.
it?
And we have some... there's some details about how they're related, but honestly, I'm not sure I care. Like, it's really, really tenuous.
Yeah, that's so tenuous.
That barely even counts. It's not like she's her
11th cousin.
Like, do they even know each other?
I mean, I'm sure she's been on the Ellen show. I'm sure Madonna's
yeah,
been on
probably,
the Ellen show.
Probably. All right, so we got the first one wrong. But I'm sure we can redeem ourselves. Let's go to number two.
Okay.
In 1971, after an NYC office worker announced he would be celebrating churches that performed gay unions, hate groups set fire to his office.
1971.
So 1971.
Does it say what country is? Are we assuming America?
It's in New York City.
In New York City. Yeah.
Yes. This sounds like it could
sounds
be
like it
true.
Happened.
I mean, Stonewall happened in 1969, which means that 2 years later,
yeah.
a person who had been elected to office to say, you know what, we're going to celebrate any church that performs gay union.
Yeah, they might have felt emboldened. They wanted to show solidarity.
That makes sense
yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
Whether people, hate groups would respond by setting fire to his office, though, do we think that would have happened in 1971?
Yeah.
Do you think there's a lot of resistance?
Like yeah, yeah, I mean, when you look at what happened to Harvey Milk.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
so
yeah, absolutely.
I think, yeah, hate is strong. And I could imagine something like that happening. But I can't put a finger on who it might be or I don't know
yeah.
more about it.
And the reason I kind of want to say that this might be false is that I've never actually heard this before.
Yeah, there's that.
And again, I'm not an expert on LGBT history at all, but
you
like
sure?
I've read a fair bit
yeah.
and you know, I've watched quite a few documentaries and things and I've never actually heard this.
What
which
if we
is
get all
making
of them wrong?
Oh, I feel like we might. We're going to really make a show of ourselves, Dean. I've just brought you on the show to humiliate you.
I mean, I just won't retweet that I was on the show.
Nobody's going to buy the book.
I'll just say, listen to the first 20 minutes only.
And then switch off.
Yeah,
quick.
Listen to Kim's song and then stop.
And then done. Enter the competition and then you're done. What are we saying? It could go either way. It sounds very plausible to me.
It sounds plausible, but then maybe your producers are that sneaky there, making it really plausible.
Is she smart enough to come up with something so sneaky, though? I'm not sure.
I think your producer's very smart.
She is very smart. She's giving me evil eyes now. I'm going to say... Oh, I don't know, Dean. I'm going to have to throw it to you.
Let's go true.
True. We're saying that this is absolutely true. This did happen. That is our final answer.
Oh,
it's false. quite the opposite. The reaction was actually that LGBT activists threw an impromptu gay wedding in the NYC office worker's workplace.
Well, that's beautiful. And I'm glad that person stood up and made that stand for solidarity and it was so well received.
That's really lovely to hear, actually. Yeah. You know, like in 1971, that was the reaction. You know, I think we have so much miserable and negative history, and it's lovely to hear that.
Yeah. No,
this was a little bit of happiness.
Definitely.
Yay. Good. I mean, we got it wrong, but still.
But it happened,
still lovely.
Which is the beautiful
still
thing.
Lovely.
Yeah.
All right, our next one. An official Star Trek novel was published in 1985 with scenes depicting Kirk and Spock as lovers.
Official?
Apparently so, an official Star Trek novel.
No, fan fiction, I'd believe, obviously.
Yeah, because...
Official?
I don't think that would be canon. Yeah. I don't think that would make sense, and I don't think they would officially release that.
Yeah. I don't know how I would have known this. Like, because, I mean, I was one at the time. Were you born?
No.
So, like, this one's difficult.
I was born 5 years later.
It doesn't feel like a key milestone in LGBT history. Like, that would be on one of those timelines.
Yeah. And it was like, but neither Kirk or Spock, I mean, I don't really know Star Trek, but neither of them have come out as gay in the future, right?
No, but I think Kirk would have gone with anyone. Like, Kirk was quite put it about a lot.
What a rascal, that Kirk.
I think Kirk is pansexual. Like, I want to claim Kirk as a pansexual icon.
Okay, I feel that. That seems quite progressive for 1985.
Yeah.
You know, considering that we don't have so much representation even now, mm-hmm. you know, especially in the world of, like, sci-fi and stuff.
Yeah, no, it's not great. Should we say that one's false?
I feel like it's false, I don't want to lead you astray because we've got two wrong.
Yeah, we can get them all wrong and we're still winners.
Let's get them all wrong. Let's rebel. all right, okay, let's say it's false.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, we are saying that this is false, completely fabricated.
Oh my goodness.
It's true! How is this true? Okay, so while these parts were supposed to be edited out, the wrong version was printed. It then became a collector's item. So who created this in the first place?
They just drew it for fun?
It was supposed to be edited out. Like, they were just, like, joking around.
Probably. That's really fun, though.
That is a fun fact. Yeah, yeah. I don't know where you're getting this information from, but I love it.
I want to see this collector's item.
Me too.
I wonder how much it goes for.
Do we have pictures of it? We'd love to see a picture. And then we can describe it through the magic of radio. All right, let's move on to the next one. So we've got three wrong, Dean.
Yep. Yeah, just as I expected, to be honest. Yeah.
All right, okay, fourth one. Okay. Man, I Feel Like a Woman, the Shania Twain song, mm-hmm. Was inspired by Shania Twain's first romantic encounter with a woman.
Okay.
Is Shania Twain a lesbian, bisexual? I don't know much about Shania Twain, other than I like dancing to that song.
It's a great song. It's a man, I feel like
a woman. It doesn't make sense to me that it was inspired by a first romantic encounter with a woman, because that's not what the song is about.
What do you feel the song's about?
The song is about, like, I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling really confident today. Like, I'm going out into the world and... Yeah, right? I can't think what the lyrics are, but...
Yeah. No, that seems like
I'm going out tonight. I'm feeling all right. I'm gonna... Don't know the words.
You don't know the words.
It's about going out and, like, feeling yourself...
Sure, it's good. But maybe it's about the other woman. Maybe it's about, like, seeing this really confident woman and finding her attractive.
Maybe. Yeah, that would make sense. And maybe, you know, I guess if you have a sexual encounter or a romantic encounter with somebody for the first time, it does give you that kind of, like...
Mm.
Preppiness, doesn't it? Like, I feel really confident.
But
really
I had always interpreted it as a self-confidence and kind of, like...
It's a self-love song.
Writing it about... Yeah, so should we say that's... false?
Yeah, I want to say that, but we've just done so badly. Part of me is like, should we just go with the opposite of what we think? I think this has to be false. We're saying false, right?
We're saying false.
final answer. False! Yes! Yay. We got one right.
Visit to a drag bar. So, man, I feel like I'm almost inspired by Shania Twain's visit to a drag bar.
So, that's literally, amazing. Man feeling like a woman. Yeah. I love that.
I feel empowered now. That's amazing.
That is really, really cool. Yes. The more you know. Thank you for bringing these facts to my attention. I'm really enjoying these. Okay, we've got
I apologise to the drag community for not knowing that one. We got it right, but I didn't know the reason why.
All right, our last one is... Germany leads the world in Google searches for gay porn.
Yes.
Yes. Why? Yeah. Why?
I just think.
You just think so.
It just seems right.
See, I think they're the, I think they're the biggest producers of gay porn. Oh, I think that is a thing.
You know more than me.
I think they produce more gay porn than any other country in the world. But whether that means that they produce the most Google searches for it, because I'm sure that it's being exported, you know, okay, to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And also, like,
maybe it's all the German porn stars Googling themselves.
I kind of feel like Germany is a very sexually liberated country.
Berlin is. I don't know about the rest of the country.
No, a lot of it is. Yeah. I've been out of Munich. They go crazy. Okay. Don't they? And I just feel like maybe, like, if they're a little bit more sexually liberated, maybe there are less people at home watching porn and more people out there, like, exploring. Perhaps.
Maybe they're watching it for tips to then go
true,
and do
true,
what they're going to do.
I will go either way on this. I think you're like, you want to say yes.
I said yes.
You've already said yes. Okay, I'm trying to talk you out of it. It's not
locked
happening.
In.
Okay, we are saying that this is absolutely true. Germany leads the world in Google searches for gay porn. False. Oh, Dean, I'm so sorry. It's actually Pakistan. Gay sex is illegal in Pakistan, but it is also the leading country for Google terms such as... teen anal sex and man fucking man. This is exactly what I meant. It's a country where it's illegal and it's repressed.
Yeah, that
does
make
has
sense.
The most searches for these things because they're not able to go out there and explore them, which is actually really sad. Actually,
yeah,
that's a little bit heartbreaking. Yeah.
We got four right.
wrong. We got four wrong and one right, but we gave it our best effort.
And
Dean.
We all learned something today.
We all learned something today, and that is what matters. Right, I think it's time for some more music. Let's have a little bit. Oh, this is one of our absolute faves. This is Andrea DiGiovanni. They're an absolute superstar. This is Forbidden Love.
Sound. I can hear the sirens calling. They're getting close. Put on your clothes. But we gotta keep on running. Danger is dangerous. Ain't safe for people like us. Heartbeat speeding. They gon' take our lives if they find us. Shouldn't need to do this, but we do. This time we're a bit more than we could chew. Oh, I need somewhere to hide when I'm with you.
And your gay friends.
Dean, I understand that you were... I saw it. you were recently on the cover of Attitude magazine.
I was,
that,
and it was...
That's very exciting. Tell me more about that.
It was super special. I was on the front cover with my partner, Tom, and we were kissing, and they wanted to do a cover, 25 covers, because Attitude's been going for 25 years.
Yeah.
So they did 25 different covers with different pairs or groups of people kissing or being affectionate, showing love. And it was just such a big deal, one, to be on a magazine cover, but two, for our relationship, like, to put that out there so publicly, and to have been asked, because Attitude is actually the first magazine my mum gave me when I came out.
So
I think she must have gone into the store and found the one that kind of seemed friendliest. And I think Attitude is like one of those magazines. I now write for them as well, which is really fun. But like, it is one of those magazines that just kind of has been really affirming for me when I've kind of dipped into it over the years, because it just covers a lot of broad stories looks at the world and looks at the arts. But being on a magazine cover, it was a bit terrifying.
Yeah, I was
like,
about to say.
Doing the shoot and kissing. And we shot, we shot outside, and we had people like honking, some in support, some in like with negative comments to make.
Oh,
like
gosh.
Someone on a bike said, "Ugh," and like someone in a car just shouted the word "gay." And I was just like, yeah, like that's the point. And it was really interesting because the whole team doing the shoot was like, this is the reason we're doing this.
Because
we need to confront these things. Like, why no one shouts at a man and woman kissing in the street? Like, so why if two men kiss in the street is such a big deal? So we were really glad that we got the chance to do it, and it's like a proper keepsake. I'm gonna frame it and put it in. We're moving in together on Friday, so I think it helped propel our relationship.
Yeah, you need to put it like above the mantle
definitely.
Like that lovely picture of the two of you kissing.
Definitely.
I think it was really interesting what you were saying there about, you know, like it just doesn't happen to, you know, a straight couple kissing in the street. And I also think like a lot of people don't perhaps realize how much it does happen to gay people.
We think, I mean, With Tom now and with previous partners, I think twice when I'm holding my partner's hand in the street, let alone kissing, you know, whether we're going home from a night out and one of us rests our head on the other's shoulder. It's like you get nervous about that because you don't know. You have to keep your wits about you, whether you're like on the street, on the underground, on a bus. Like, you never know what could be happening. Even outside a gay club, as soon as you step outside, you're like, oh, my bubble's burst.
Yeah,
the safety
absolutely.
Of what I had inside this venue has gone away. And sometimes even within venues, it's weird, because I think you get a lot of tourism to gay bars, I shall say.
Yes, that is a thing.
When I've been single and I've hit on guys that have been really upset and been like, I'm straight, and I'm like, okay, but don't be so upset. Like, you know, it's fine that you're here, but don't get angry or upset that someone's hit on you.
I wouldn't get upset if a woman hit on
me.
Like, how dare you?
I bet they do all the time.
This has happened like once in my life. And I was like, oh gosh, what? I don't know what to do.
But yeah, it is still important to make these statements, and whether it's with a magazine cover or, you know, being bold and holding your partner's hand in the street. I know, you know, it's scary if you're somewhere where that's really out of the ordinary. In London or a big city, you're a bit more, you know, people might be more used to it. But other places in this country, it's still something that you will turn heads, even if they don't say anything. And it's about how you feel about making people uncomfortable. Maybe they need it, and maybe that will kind of slowly help them realize this is a normal thing.
I think we have this, it's not a problem, but there's this interest. If I see a gay couple holding hands in the street, I get so excited that my head will turn. I will look back, and I'm obviously excited about it. And like, oh, how lovely. Look, like two gay boys holding hands or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then I suddenly become aware that I'm now looking and staring, and they may be, I mean, I hardly look like a typical straight guy who's going to cause trouble, but like, you don't know
just
that.
Just smile though.
Yeah, I try to.
That's the way to deal with it. I think just smile, because that breaks down so many of the kind of misconceptions or preconceptions people might have. As soon as you smile, they're like, oh, this is a friendly person, like this is okay, and it would give them a sense of like, okay, let's keep going.
Mm-hmm. I was having a conversation with one of my straight best friends recently, and I was trying to explain the issues around like going on first dates, for instance, because you know, you might want to make that move, you might want to, you know, touch them on the leg, you might want to go in for the kiss at the end of the night or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I was trying to explain how, you know, so many LGBT plus people have this extra you know, there's enough fear and anxiety on a first date as it is, you know, yep. when you're trying to make a move on somebody, and then suddenly to throw in that extra level of, but are we safe to do this here? Mm. Are they comfortable to do this in public? Because they might not be. And there's yeah. all these other dimensions and layers.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's something that a lot of people just don't realize is an issue. So it's great to talk about it.
Definitely.
And it's also great to see you putting yourself out there on Attitude Magazine, one of the best magazines in the world. We love Attitude.
Okay.
We are going to be reacting to some sex confessions.
Amazing.
Very, very shortly. But before we do that, we're going to have a little bit of a trail.
FUBAR Radio presents Access All Areas.
This is the busiest little studio in the land today.
We've got the absolutely gorgeous love artist, Jordan Rian.
Hi. Jordan Rian. She's in the house.
Well, I've just seen your phone ringing with a certain name on it.
What is the name?
Danny. What's going on now?
We are together.
Are you an official couple? Were you upset that Danny contacted some of the exes from the show?
No.
Gosh, I wish I was like you. Every Thursday on 6 PM on FUBAR Radio.
Okay, Dean, are you ready? Are you ready to react to some of our lovely listeners' sex confessions?
I'm so ready. This is really exciting.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much to all of our listeners who have sent these in. If you would like to send in confessions or questions or anything to do with sex and relationships, you can do that by emailing callum@fubarradio.com, and we will react to those and read them out on future shows. It's completely anonymous as well, so we won't read out your name or tell anyone who you are. Mm. Dean, do you want to read some of these, or do you want me to read them?
I don't mind. I can read the first one. Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay. Is it normal not to enjoy anal sex as a gay man?
Okay. I mean, how long have you got? I could talk about this for hours and hours and hours. So I am a gay man who does not have anal sex. I've not had anal sex in about 7 years now. I used to have anal sex, decided I really didn't like it. Didn't like topping or bottoming. Mm. And if you feel that way, it's called being a side. And it's actually really common. I have no statistics to give on this. But just from like my sample of like talking to people, talking to like radio guests, friends, meeting new people, I honestly think it's about a quarter of gay men don't actually like anal sex. So it is completely normal.
And have you found partners have struggled with that?
No. This is the thing. Like, so many people say this to me. They're like, oh, you know, as a gay man, if you don't have anal sex, you must really struggle when meeting new people. Mm. I think literally since I stopped having anal sex all those years ago, I think there's only been two guys who were kind of, one of them was a top and one of them were a bottom, and they were kind of like, I like really need this in order for us to date. And I was like, you know what? Fine. Like, you've stated your needs and I can't fit that. So I'm sorry, but like it's not going to work. And that's fine. I think that's very adult to kind of have that conversation. But it's actually most of the time not been an issue. I don't know whether I'm just attracted to people who feel the same as me. Or perhaps
it's you're so amazing that whatever you do is great for them. They're like, just look at me. Just smile at me, Callum.
Oh. So that is a did you know that was a thing before, Dean?
I've never heard the term side.
Yes.
I knew top, bottom and versatile. That's all I really knew. And, you know, in my life, I've kind of like swung different ways with it. And used to think one was important or the other was really important. And now I'm kind of just like, just whatever works for me and my partner, whether that is doing it or not doing it, you know, and it doesn't have to happen all the time. It doesn't have to happen at all. But like, I think, just for me, it's about, you know, communication with a partner and
absolutely.
Thinking about, you know, what they do enjoy, what they don't enjoy, what they might do out of obligation. You know, I know a lot of people that say they do certain things when hooking up or when in a relationship that they just do because they think it's expected of them, and they've never actually communicated what they actually enjoy or what they don't enjoy. They just think certain things have to be done, you know, to satisfy someone. And, you know, whether it's you don't enjoy giving blowjobs or you don't enjoy anal sex, like, you should be able to say that to someone, you know. Or if you have another thing that you do enjoy, you should feel you can ask, you know, not insist, but ask, can we try this, you know, but be open to the communication about why that's important to you. Because, you know, we're not great at talking about sex in Britain, I think, but within the gay community, there's also a lot of shame around anal sex and sex in general. So, which is kind of, for me, I know a lot of that came from religion, you know, and so for other people it may have come from other sources. But I think, yeah, once you can get past the shame, there's a lot to explore and enjoy. And, you know, you might like one thing with one partner and not with the next. So be open, I think.
I think we really don't need to, like, box ourselves in so much either. You know, we don't need to say we're this thing or, like... I'm not closed off to having anal sex again in future. You know, I haven't for all these years because it's not really for me. But if I decided I wanted to tomorrow, then I would. Or if I met somebody really special and they really wanted to and I felt comfortable enough to start trying that again, then I absolutely would. And I think I would also say to this person, you know, just as a caveat to everything I have said, that if you don't enjoy anal sex, there could be another reason for that. Like maybe you don't enjoy it because you find it too painful, for instance. And maybe there's some things that you can try to make it less painful and then maybe it'll become more enjoyable. Perhaps you don't enjoy it because of the partner you're with now. You know, there could be a million reasons you don't enjoy it. So I don't think anyone should feel like they have to be like, right, I'm never having anal sex again, or I don't like anal sex, I have to have anal sex. You know, just you know, it's about communication and and just
communication
going
with it. Is key.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, should we do the next one?
Okay.
I'm scared that I won't be able to settle because I hoed around in the past. I love the choice of words in this one. I'm not sure I understand this question. Do you think they're saying that, like, they're worried that nobody will want to settle with them because they hoed around, or that now that they've hoed around that they won't be able to go back?
Without them here, it's hard to know. I mean, I think the stigma around being sex positive, like, is not one you should buy into. So the right person won't stigmatize you. So someone you want to settle with should accept your past, whether it's your sexual history or other things in your past. So don't feel that stigma. You know, they're the wrong person for you if they try and make you feel bad for having enjoyed sex. I think if it's about you and you think you want to continue to have lots of sex and be sex positive and go out there and have multiple partners, you could still have a primary partner. You know, there's so many ways to have relationships. So I think you could have an open relationship. You could have a polyamorous kind of arrangement with various people. But it's, you know, do some reading up on that and think about what does settling mean for you? What does settling down mean for you? If you enjoy the variety, keep doing it until you don't want to. I think it's great. If you're enjoying it, do it.
I don't like that they use the word scared, you know. Like I don't think you should ever let that fear hold you back. If you know, if you're hoeing around, as you so delicately put it, you know, and you're enjoying yourself, then that's all that matters.
If you're enjoying yourself and looking after yourself, then you are there's nothing to be scared about. I don't think settling will come when it's someone that you want to be with, and then that will kind of change your mindset. I think, you know, when there's someone that you do want to, like, settle with, then you'll have those conversations with them organically and you'll realize, okay, I'm really fulfilled in this, and so this will be, let's have more of this, and then the other people will kind of, like, disappear eventually, maybe.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
He gives such incredible advice there, Dean.
Do I?
You do.
Oh,
you do.
Can we ask the next one, though?
Yeah, you do. I feel like you want to do this.
Well,
one.
I'm asking you for this person.
Okay.
Callum, where do you stand on group sex?
I think it's great. Yes is my answer to group sex. You know, I've had a lot of group sex. I'm sure I'll continue to have a lot of group sex. I think it's just fun. Like, if you enjoy having sex with one person, then why not enjoy having sex with
When you say you've had a lot of group sex.
Like, a fair bit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to quantify that. I'm not going to give you exact numbers, but, like, a fair bit.
Like, yeah. Like regular groups of people, or just you get invited to a group? Or?
I don't know how much information I want to divert.
Is there
no,
a WhatsApp
not regularly.
Group for this?
Okay, I would say I've had group sex with about 10 different groups in my life.
Nice.
So, you know, not regularly or all the time, but I've dabbled and had a lot of fun with it.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I just think... you know, why not explore these things? Mm. You know, I think, again, there's a lot of stigma around these things, and there doesn't need to be.
Yeah. Never more than a threesome for me. I've been missing out.
Live your life. You've got to
live your best life.
You've got to live your life. I had something else to say on group sex, but it's completely slipped my mind. I felt like I had something insightful to add. No, I think we're going to have to move on to the next one.
You read that one.
Okay. I want to masturbate, but I'm scared/crazy shy. How do I start? Ooh.
Wow.
That's an interesting one. Again, I'm the word scared for a start. There's obviously a reason for that fear. Mm. I don't know what that is. I would be guessing. But there shouldn't be anything to be afraid of.
Yeah.
You know, nothing bad is going to happen from you masturbating. It's completely normal. It's completely fine. All those myths about, you know, you'll go blind if you masturbate too much, etc., are complete nonsense.
I mean, it's the safest sex you can have.
It's the safest sex you can have. So, you know, I don't think there's anything to be afraid of. But I also understand that if you're trying something for the first time, that can be quite daunting. But so maybe just try and take the pressure off yourself. Stop rushing yourself. Just, you know, if you fancy doing it, allow yourself to do it. But don't be like, okay, we have to do this. Maybe there's just too much pressure around.
And I think go slow and take it easy. Don't focus on like reaching an orgasm necessarily. Just like get to know that part of your body and just like just look at it and feel it and see, you know, what the sensations are in various parts, and just explore yourself. And just, you know, I guess you need to feel comfortable in the surroundings. So, you know, do you need to make sure you do it at a time when no one else is in the house? Or, you know, why are you scared or shy? Is it about someone else walking in? Do you have the stimulus that you need? If you don't have the imagination to think of things, do you want to find, you know, look something up that might stimulate you in a way? But I think, yeah, it shouldn't just be about like doing it to come, because like I think even, you know, sex with another person shouldn't be that either. I think it should be about enjoying the body that you have. Our bodies are amazing and they can give us so much pleasure in so many ways. And I think this is just one way to enjoy your body. So I think, yeah, just take your time with it. That's what I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's amazing advice, Dean. That actually brings us right up to the end of our lovely show this evening. I wish we could have done more sex confessions.
I never knew that I'd be coming on to give people advice about masturbation.
And yet here you are. Well, welcome to the Callum McSwiggan Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk again really quick about your book. Where can people get it? Everywhere.
People can get my book, The Black Flamingo, absolutely everywhere. So it will be out in hardback from tomorrow, the 8th of August. And it will be also available as an audiobook and a Kindle book as well. So you can get it everywhere that you can get your books and your audiobooks. So please do and enjoy it.
Amazing. Well, I will definitely be getting myself a copy. I was just flicking through just a moment ago and it looks absolutely stunning. So I cannot wait to tear into that.
Yeah, thank you.
Remember to enter our lovely Kim Petras competition as well. Just hop on over to the FUBAR Radio Instagram where you can enter and win yourself tickets to see Kim in heaven. Dean, you've been an amazing guest and I'm going to play you out with a little bit of Beautiful World.
Woo.
See you later.
See ya.
The doctor listened to my chest. He said I passed all the tests. He said he thinks I'm just depressed. And I probably need some rest. And I don't got too many friends. I don't know where they went. I seem to lose them in the end. There's no one here to hear me vent. But I know it's a beautiful world. I just can't see it right now. There's amazing things waiting out there. I just can't find them right now. Can't see it right now. I'm walking round, I'm about to snap. My best defense is to attack. I can't control how I react.
do things I can't take back. I'm sick and tired of this routine. I really need to change a scene. And I'm not crazy, I don't think, but I can tell I'm on the brink. But I know it's a beautiful world, I just can't see it right now.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.